Hey, you wonderful people. This is another episode of the Upgraded Life Podcast. I'm going to be bringing you Cody Butler. Cody Butler is a small business marketing coach. He also has a book that's really powerful that if you are a small business owner and you're trying to figure out how to get your brand and your message out there, it's an incredible book for you. I love this man's passion. And I love his authenticity. This is truly a man that has a heart for people and a mission to help people figure out who they are and grow their businesses. This was a great conversation. I personally benefited tremendously from it. I even bought a copy of his book. All right, so I'll shut up. Let's get to the show. Let's buckle up and go for a ride. Hello, thanks for tuning in to the Upgraded Life Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Nick Sotelo. The Upgraded Life is my personal project where I help people realize and reach their potential. I've been a professional helper for 20 years. Here's what I'm convinced of. The life that you have right now and the life that you want tomorrow is a product of your personal mindset, mission, and movement. Each episode of the Upgraded Life Podcast is going to give you something that you can do as soon as the episode is over to upgrade your personal mindset. Your mindset informs your mission. Your mission tells you how to move every single day. And together, that is the Upgraded Life. All right, here we go with another episode of the Upgraded Life Podcast. I'm bringing you from Australia, the one and only Cody Butler. If you don't know who that is, this is going to change that. You're going to absolutely get to know who he is. I've recently been introduced to him and have been sinking myself into the work that he has out there. Actually just purchased one of his programs, so I'm excited to dive into that in the days to come. But he's written two great books, Got Attitude and The 90-Day Marketing Plan. He's a podcaster in his own rights. He's an international speaker, and he's a coach. And if I read it right, Cody, correct me if I'm wrong, you've helped at least 5,000 small businesses get better at what they're doing or get started overall. So that's quite a resume.
That's right.
I'm super excited to have you here. Thank you so much for being willing to take the time. I know you've got wife and little ones, as do I. And this is a activity, right, that's going to build income, right? I've been listening to you in terms
it's
of
income. This is income generating activity, Nick.
Yeah. So Cody, introduce us to me and to my audience. Just kind of give us an idea of who you are and what you're about and why podcasting is the thing that you're doing right now.
Okay. So what I'm about really is like, I want to help people achieve the things that I basically work with people just like me. So people that have the problems that I've had and have the aspirations that I have, and to get them from A to B. So I grew up poor. I grew up with a lot of anxiety and stress around money. I grew up, wanting bigger things from life and knowing that there was more to life and having dreams to have that, but not really having the means to get that. And as I was coming up through the decades basically and paying my dues, there were very few people that were willing to help me. And I had to figure a lot of this stuff out for myself. So my goal and my dream really is to help people get from where they are, which is where I was, to having an element of being able to combine what it is that you love to do and actually making an income from that. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people, they go into business because they want to do more of what it is they love. And the reality is if their marketing is not handled, then they just create a self-imposed prison for themselves. And they would, right. To be honest, be better off in a job.
Yeah. Nick. Yeah. I know you're well-versed in the personal development world and, all of the marketing world. So that sounds quite a bit like Ken Coleman's concepts there. Are you familiar with Ken Coleman?
I'm not. I mean, if I was going to compare myself to anybody, which, I'm not comparing myself to right. Jim Rohn would be the person. I'm not comparing myself to Jim Rohn. I'm a whippersnapper compared to him. But it's like, if I was aspiring to be like somebody, it would be a Jim Rohn. I think Perfect. Jim Rohn is, if I have a hero, it's Jim.
Awesome. So I'll just kind of share that Ken Coleman thing. He talks about what is your thing. There's what you're good at, and there's what you're passionate about. And that one of those overlap is what he calls the sweet spot.
The sweet spot, gotcha, right? Yeah.
And then people kind of like, if you might be passionate about something, but your skill isn't there. So that's where that self-imposed prison comes in,
that's,
right?
That's right, yeah, yeah.
Or you might have skill at something, but you really don't like it, right? And so you just drudge through it, and eventually it'll plateau, and here you are.
I think a lot of people have the build it and they will come mentality, and that simply isn't true. That's a fallacy. That it's a mindset that's wrong. It's like build it and you'll go broke. It's probably more accurate.
Right.
You know, so you've always got to start with the end in mind, thinking, well, okay, well, how am I going to get butts on seats? How am I going to get boots in the room? You know, how am I going to get people into what it is that I'm doing? How am I going to get people interested in what it is that I'm doing? And that almost is an afterthought. The marketing aspect of the business for most people is an afterthought, when actually it should be a case of that's what you've got to consider first. Is what I'm doing going to be viable from a marketing perspective? Because if a lot of people thought about that before actually getting into a venture, it would determine whether you actually get into that venture or not.
Sure, absolutely. Where did you run into Jim Rome? Who introduced you to him?
Oh, look, I'm not sure, to be honest. I think when I started getting into personal development, which would have been around 2005, I may have came across him on YouTube or something like that. And that's where all that started. I bought some of his books, and then I bought some of his training programs. And it just went from there. I'm not sure the exact entry point, but I'm pretty sure it's probably YouTube around 2006,
nice. Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah, yeah, the algorithm introduced you.
That's right. Yeah.
Right. So were you literally just searching personal development at one point in time, or what was going on?
Yeah. So what happened was I went through a bad period in my life, and I became very depressed and very anxious and had a lot of issues. And I was seeking solutions to my depression. I was seeking solutions to my anxiety and the problems that I was facing. And that's probably where I came into contact with Jim Rohn, to be honest, you know, along with a bunch of other personal development gurus at that point. So I was able to resolve those issues in my life very, very quickly. So like people that knew me, like 6 months after I started the personal development journey, people go, I don't even recognize you. You're just a different person. And I mean that in a better way. You know, it's like you've completely transformed your life, and you've done it in such a short period of time. And I had those steps. I documented those steps. So that was my first book, you know, God Attitude. Was really, I wanted to help people through the problems that I had faced, which was depression, anxiety, and some other issues as well. And I started a business around that. So I wrote the book and I started a life coaching website, and guess what? You know, nothing happened, absolutely nothing at all.
Okay.
And that was where, you know, I kind of came to the realization, to have a passion and to have something of value to offer is really not enough. You've got to have a passion, something to offer, and a way to present that to the marketplace.
Right.
And that's where I started to My journey as a marketer started to unfold. I'm like, this is irrelevant. A is irrelevant without B.
Gotcha. So it was still a necessary part of your process, though, right? I mean, you had to
100%. I mean, and again, mindset. You've got to appreciate that. It's like everything that happens. Every master was once a disaster. If I'd have had a moderate amount of success marketing that life coaching business, I would not be where I am today. I would be very moderately successful, because I would have stopped there.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, I wrote God Attitude in 2008, I believe, and it became a bestseller in 2017.
Okay.
So it took me that long to develop the skills. It took me that long to develop the skills to really take that message to the market,
right,
in a way that was meaningful.
And
go on, Nick.
No, you go ahead.
I said, yeah, had I just had a moderate amount of success right out of the gate, that never would have happened. I would have just plodded along at my same average pace.
For sure. And I don't know how much you dug into me and who I am. I am trained as a therapist. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist in Oregon. And I actually have a PhD in counseling, right? So when you talk about how you got yourself out of anxiety and depression, I'm really interested in that. What was your process?
Well, you know, to boil it down, it's like, you know, your life is just a 3D printout of your thoughts. That's it. It's like your mind's a 3D printer, and it just prints out. And what you see around you in reality is just nothing more than a 3D printout of your thoughts. That's it. And it's like, if you want to change your life, change your thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, you know, thoughts create feelings create actions create results.
Mm-hmm.
if I feel like this, you know, if I feel like this action I'm about to take is going to be a complete waste of time, that's going to produce a negative emotion, which is mm-hmm. going to produce a negative action, which is going to produce a negative outcome.
Right.
You know, simply shifting those thoughts. And you have the choice. Like that's the, you know, as hard as it might be, you do get to choose what you think. It sure. might be very hard initially yeah. to choose those thoughts, but you do have the choice. You know, that's yeah. the main thing as well.
So depressive thoughts, anxiety thoughts, are those things that you learn to tackle and change?
Yeah. Look, so basically, like the way I ask myself the question, what would I have to believe about myself to feel this way?
Gotcha.
That's the question. What would I have to believe? Yeah. So one of the problems that I was facing that caused the depression was a failed relationship. And it was a blessed relief. In actuality, looking back, it's like, you know, it's like why I stayed in that relationship so long was unbelievable. It was like, it was a horrific relationship where I was treated very badly. And I may have done some bad treating as well. Who knows? But I know I was treated badly. So at some point, I've got to ask myself the question, if I'm being honest, for you to be upset about a relationship ending that treated you like that, what would you have to believe about yourself? Mm-hmm. And the answer is, I would have to believe that that is all I'm worthy of. And then the question is, well, is that true?
Right.
So we're just uncovering the truth. It's like, okay, well, I don't believe that's true. I believe that I'm worth more than that. So then it makes it impossible. It makes it literally impossible to be upset if I've exited a relationship that I believe is detrimental and I'm worthy and deserving of more. The only reason I could possibly be upset is because I think that that's the best I could ever do. And now I've just lost it. Does mm-hmm. that make sense?
Sure. Absolutely. Yeah.
So it's just shifting the thoughts on that. It's like asking better questions about the situation. Well, what would you have to believe to feel this way? What does this actually mean?
Right.
Does this really mean you're never going to have another relationship? Does mm-hmm. this really mean you're going to be on your own for the rest of your life? Does this really mean that? Or is that voice in your head telling you that and it's just deception?
Right. Yeah, I heard your talk that you gave with Dr. Pele, and you were okay. recounting the story of your mom giving you $20, right? So I remember that one.
Yeah, exactly. That was a major, that was hit me like a ton of bricks.
Yeah.
I mean, for anybody who hasn't seen that interview, which is probably most people, basically what happened there, Dr. Nick, was I was 34 years old. I went to see my mother and father, which was like an hour and a half drive mm-hmm. away. And I'm telling myself all these thoughts like, you know, you're wealthy, you're successful, you're this and that. And the reality was I wasn't at all. I was flat broke. And as I was leaving my mother's house, she gave me the equivalent of like $20 and said, here, take this money because I don't want you not coming back for another month because you can't afford the gas.
Right.
And the reality was it was true. She hit the nail on the head. I would not be back for another month because I couldn't afford the gas for the journey. And the hour and a half journey home, all I just could say to myself was disgusting. That's disgusting. This is absolutely disgusting. You know, you're 34 years old and here you are. And it's the truth that will set you free. It's the truth. It's like face, you know, this whole, you know, fake it till you make it. Well, you know, have a positive outset. It's like, you know, don't say, you know, I'm wealthy, I'm wealthy, I'm wealthy. Say, I'm broke and I will not rest until I'm wealthy. Mm. I'm broke and I will not rest until I'm wealthy. You know, I was just telling myself the whole, I'm wealthy, I'm wealthy, I'm wealthy. And if I can believe it, I can achieve it. But the reality was I was creating a world of deception in my own mind. But as soon as, you know, my mother doing that to me snapped me out of it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that year, I made $9,000 that year. The following year, I made $182,000.
Wow. Wow.
And my skills didn't change. What yeah. changed between my ears?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
That's what changed.
So, yeah. So that was the part that I caught. And, you know, you kind of expanded a little bit there in how you just described that. But, you know, it's that, how do you shift your mindset? You just said your thoughts, you know, are represented as a 3D blueprint, you know, in your life. But then, so this kind of goes into affirmation work, right? And do you just create affirmations that are lies if they don't represent kind of your current state?
Absolutely not.
Right.
And lying is bad, period. There's no such thing as a white lie. There's no such thing as a good lie. There's no such thing as a lie justified or the outcome justified. It's like lies are bad, period. Mm-hmm. Lies are bad, period. If you lie to someone, you know, you and I cannot have an honest relationship if I lie to you. Mm-hmm. So why do you think you can have an honest relationship with yourself if you're lying to yourself? Mm-hmm. So the secret with affirmations is not to lie. The secret of affirmations is to word it in such a way that it's true. So my affirmation went from, you know, I'm wealthy, healthy, and successful, which was a flat out lie. I was not very healthy. I was definitely not wealthy, and I certainly wasn't successful. To, I will not rest until I'm wealthy, healthy, and successful. I will not rest until I'm health, wealthy, healthy, and successful. So I've still got the wealth, health, and success routine going on in my mind, but I've added reality to it. I will not rest until.
Gotcha.
No, if you tell yourself you're healthy, wealthy, and successful, and you believe it, well, you're not going to take much action, are you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then, you know, like, Jack Canfield and, you know, other folks will talk about, don't make affirmations. They're not goals necessarily. They're not 90 day type goals. Is that your take on it, or what's your spin on that?
Yeah. An affirmation is, it's basically a reminder of what it is that you're doing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I will not rest until I'm wealthy. I will not rest until I'm healthy. I will not rest until I'm successful. It's like, it's just reminding me. It's just remind, because we're very forgetful as human beings. We'll set a goal this week and we'll forget it. So it's like, I have, you know, I have routine. So it's like, routines are very helpful. So like, before I get up in the morning, I run through, you know, we'll call them affirmations for want of a better.
What do you call them? But,
oh, I don't have a name for them.
Reminders.
Yeah, but yeah, like, I was in bed the other morning and my wife goes, can you get up, please? And I'm like, I'm working. And I was just laying there. She goes, what do you mean you're working? I'm like, in my mind, I'm planning the day. I'm planning. It's like, this is the first stage of work for me. And then, you know, I've got a walk routine where I go for a walk and I repeat things to myself to remind myself of what's going on. And equally as important, you've got, like, this was super, super important. That broke, really one of the main things that broke me out of the depression very quickly, was when you can't control your thoughts, you've got to have a go-to routine. So the mind can't hold two thoughts simultaneously. If you think you're having two thoughts, you're simply switching back and forth between those two thoughts. So what would happen when, you know, I'd suffer from an overwhelming sense of dread or catastrophe or something bad was getting ready to happen to me. So what I did in that time was A, recognize it, and B, I counted backwards from 100 and visualized the numbers in my mind. So I'd visualize 100, then I'd visualize 99. And if I found myself like changing thoughts, I'd go back to 100 again. Mm-hmm. And then by two or three times of going through that, the emotion had passed by, because I'd crucified that thought, the thought that was causing the dread had now gone, and I was onto something else. So, and a lot of times, I don't know if I have it now, but I do. So, in weak moments when I'm unable to think for myself, so if depression or anxiety or dread comes over me, I write it down. So this says, I've had it with worry. I refuse to be treated. I refuse to be tricked with false facts. I'm tired of being drained with anxiety. I don't want people to see me this way and in this state. So I write down, I've got go-to cards. You can see how old these are, right? Mm-hmm. It's like,
yeah, that's legit. That's legit right there.
They're right here. Yeah. So, you know, I might be in a gas station waiting to pay, and all of a sudden a feeling starts to come over me. I'm like, at that point, I've kind of lost control of my mental faculties. So I just pull this out and I'm like, you know, I refuse to be tricked with false facts. I refuse to be tricked with false facts. And then within a minute or two, the dread goes away and we're back on track. So it's having routines that allow me to deal with that.
Yeah. Clinically, we call that a grounding technique.
Sounds like a good thing to call it. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it works.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think it works. Kind of, I'll have the same critique of that, like you did, you know, around affirmations, is that you've got to be grounded in who you are, though, too, right? You can't just ground to something that's ethereal, right? And so there is an element of who am I, right?
Absolutely.
Right?
Look, for me, I mean, we're going to talk about religion here now. I don't know how okay you are with that, but it's like, for me, it's like, you know, in the God Attitude book, like the number one step to becoming well, to becoming better, is you've got to find your identity in something bigger than yourself. Mm-hmm. it's non-changeable. So for me, that's God. It can be Yahweh. It can be Jehovah. It can be, you know, Krishna. I don't really care what you call it. Mm-hmm. It makes no difference to me. But for me, like, my attitude is God is perfection. Whatever God is to you, God is perfect. And therefore, God cannot create something. If God creates an imperfection, that means he's not perfect, right? Mm. If God made a mistake, then that means he's not perfect. So I just go, well, God is perfect. He is incapable of making an imperfection. That, by default, makes me perfect. Not because of anything I've done, not because I'm great. I find my perfection and worth in the fact that God is perfect and he's created me. So by default, that makes me perfect.
Yeah.
So my sense of wholeness comes from something outside of myself that's not changeable. If I'm finding my sense of wholeness in my partner or my spouse or my work, or that's very changeable, and you're going to be blown around like a flagpole in a hurricane, mm-hmm. flag up a pole in a hurricane. You've got to find something outside of yourself that's not changeable and stake your self-esteem and self-worth on that non-changeable entity.
Absolutely.
In my opinion.
No, I'm with you 100%. And it is that, you know, and I was trained in you know, faith-based universities as well. And but we were also trained to work with people from, you know, a variety of faith traditions as well. And in the way that one professor put it is everybody has a functional ultimate, right? And some people call it God, some people call it an ethos or, you know, religion. There's this thing that we filter our experiences through that helps us determine right from wrong, you know, purpose versus non-purpose and all those things. So that functional ultimate, I'm with you on that for sure.
Well, if you look at the 12-step program, which is the only process known to, you know, help alcoholics, there's no other process known. The foundation of that is based upon, you know, submitting to a spiritual higher. It doesn't, in the 12-step program, it doesn't say it has to be God or it has to be Jehovah or it has to be the God of the Jews or the God of the Christians or the God of the Muslims. It can be the God of nature. It doesn't matter. But that whole process is based on submission to a higher authority. And as human beings, I think we need that. If we lose that submission to a higher authority, then we're in deep, deep trouble. We're in deep trouble.
Yeah.
In my opinion, like, you know, this is just my opinion. I'm not saying this is true or false, like, but this is my opinion.
Sure.
And my experience.
Yeah. Cody, what are you passionate about right now in terms of the work that you're doing?
So I like to see people move into an area of freedom in their life. So freedom is a really big thing for me. So freedom is really important. So whatever that is for people. So, you know, obviously you work with people in areas of financial freedom, which translates into time freedom and everything else. So for me, like, you can't experience true freedom without financial freedom. It's very, very difficult. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying you can't, but it's very, very difficult. People go, oh, well, money corrupts, and, you know, we're going to get all controversial. But I'm like, you know, for me, like, financial freedom is the only place where there can be no corruption. If I have no need of money, you're not going to corrupt me with money. If I'm broke and I can't feed my kids, I'm very corruptible.
Sure.
You know, so, you know, I'm really, you know, passionate about getting people to a point of financial freedom, but doing it in a way that doesn't wreck their lives. I mean, I've gone from being very poor to be having, you know, $1 million income years and stuff like that. And I've also wrecked my life and my health in doing that as well. So it's kind of,
right.
You know, hence my, you know, number one affirmation here, you know, I've had it with worry. I will not be bullied by worry. It's like, you can go from, you can create that financial freedom that you want in your life, but you can sacrifice a lot of stuff. And sometimes it's just the cost is too high. The cost of success is too high. So it's guiding people through that process of like, well, how do you get to the success? But how do we also do that in a sustainable way that isn't going to wreck your family, wreck your health, wreck your life?
Right.
Because you can trade one for the other. You can trade health, life, and family for money. It's like, that's a trade that, you know, the universe will make with you if you want to.
You can trade it, but then you have to accept the consequences of it, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because people are just doing like, that trade all the time.
Yeah, I mean, I've got three kids and a wife, which in my world, it's like, you know, that's everything for me. And it's like, you know, I want the success and I want the financial freedom and I, you know, I want to be able to do the things with my children when we're going away for the weekend and they're so excited, but that takes money to do that. So it's like, well, how do you make that balance? How do you make that work to where, you know, I'm going to do what I need to do to create the income to live the lifestyle, but at the same time, I'm not gonna sacrifice unduly time with my wife and children. Mm-hmm. How do you have both? How do you have your cake and eat it, Dr. Right. Dick? That's the question.
Right. And I love the angle that you took on finances, income, and money, right? Because this is where a lot of people, especially people that are, miserable and broke, is they get hung up about money, and is it okay to have money? And I liked how you said it is you have to have money and finances conquered in your own life so that way you can't be corrupted by it. I really appreciated that aspect of it, because there's a lot of people, probably far too many people, that misunderstand the scripture quote, right? Money is
the love of money. The love of money.
That's right. It's a misquote, isn't it? Right?
Which is bad. The love of money will end you up in jail.
Right.
If you love money, you'll end up in prison.
Right.
You'll do terrible things to people.
Right. Right. This is where, when you put profit over people, right?
Yeah, exactly right. I mean, there's nothing wrong. I mean, at the end of the day, like, when it comes to business and mindset, the number one problem that people have is they're not okay with money. And, I'll talk to clients and I'll ask the question, like, well, okay, is it okay that you gave your family a welfare Christmas last year? Is that okay? Have you asked yourself that question?
Yeah.
Is that okay? Are you okay with that? I'm like, when you met your wife and she agreed to marry you and you started a family, you made a bunch of promises and now you're reneging on all of those promises. You're coming up short on all of those promises, and your excuse is, well, it's not all about money. Well, that's neither here nor there. It's like, you're coming up short every day on your promises. Is that all right?
Right.
Is that okay? People go, oh, money won't make you happy. I'm like, well, why don't people say being poor will being poor make you happy? It's silly. It's like, money was never designed to make you happy. Money is a tool. That's like saying buying a hammer won't make you happy. Mm-hmm. No, but if you want to, put a shelf up, it's going to help.
Right. Absolutely. And I'm glad that you said it too, right? The number one problem with people in business is their hang up about money. I've worked with people and I'm a coach, and I will hear people that have truly great ideas, and then the next thing out of their mouth is, but I don't care if I make any money with it. And I'm just like, oh.
Yeah. Well, guess what's going to happen?
Right. You're not going to make any money with it, right?
It's like, finding the woman of your dreams and saying you're a magnificent species of human being, but I don't care much about you.
Right.
Will you marry me?
Right.
No, that's all right. Like, no, money is a thing. It's an energy. And, if you go to another human being and say, I think you're a great human being, but I'm never going to care about you. If you're here, great. If you're not great, I'm never going to care about you. It's like, that person is not going to want to stick around.
Right.
And I go through the exercise with my clients, speak, create an imaginary person and speak to that person like you speak to money. Mm-hmm. It's like, I'm speaking to you, Dr. Nick. Well, you're not everything. You're not that important. If you, my friend, great. If you're not great, I don't care if you show up or not.
I don't want to spend any time with you, man.
I'm not going to go to any great lengths to spend time with you. I'm like, when you replace the persona of money with the persona of a person, and you say, okay, well, speak to that persona the way you speak to money, and you can tell me what kind of reaction you're going to get. It's like, that person is not going to be in your presence.
No.
Now flip that around. Just reverse that exercise. Speak to that person in a way that gets them to want to come to you and want to remain with you. Mm-hmm. Now talk to money like that.
Right.
Create the persona of money and talk to money like that.
I love it.
And you're going to see your fine. I mean, I went from $9,000 to $182,000 in a year, and then in another 5 years went to $1 million income, and my skills didn't change. I mean, from 9,000 to 182,000, not one iota change in skills. From 200,000 to $1 million, yeah, there was some skills added, but not significantly. What changed was, all of us, I decided that it was not okay to be where I was. Mm-hmm. I made it not okay to be where I was, and I made it okay to start creating wealth, creating income.
So I'm curious, what was your business during that time when you went from 9,000 to 182?
Started a marketing agency.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Started helping other businesses.
Wow.
Started helping other businesses grow. Uh-huh. Yeah, because look, the opportunity, like the world is complete. Everything you have, everything you need, you have already. You're just not seeing it. You're seeing the world through a filter. And as soon as you change that lens, it's like a TV set. It's like, you know, what do you want to watch on TV? Well, anything's on there. You just got to press the right button, right? Mm-hmm. It's not like, I want to watch a war movie, and then you got to wait 3 days for a war movie to show up. It's like, all you got to know is, like, you've just got to change the filter, which in this case is the channel. And then all of a sudden it's in front of you. So, you know, once you give yourself permission to make money, once you give yourself that permission, you will start to see things around you that were there all along that you never knew, you never noticed. You simply didn't notice them.
Right. And I'm 100% with you, right? And there's a lot of elements in what you're talking about that, you know, are very much, you know, reflected in law of attraction and those types of concepts. But yeah. Here's a question for you, because I think, I mean, you're more of an expert than I am. So I kind of have two kind of questions around that. Because I believe it, right? I believe the same thing, that we all have what we need within us, right? Money is energy, right? And we can learn to, you know, be a conduit for that. What do you think keeps the masses from embracing that reality and that truth?
Well, it's institutional indoctrination. We've got something in Australia called tall poppy syndrome. I'm not sure if you've heard it before, but you stick your head too far above you get too high in the poppy field, they're going to chop your head off. Mm. So you're institutionally de-incentivized from ascending to, because your success doesn't benefit anybody. It doesn't benefit the institutions. It doesn't benefit the systems. It doesn't benefit the army. It doesn't benefit the corporation, right? So the school system is designed to produce two types of people, soldiers and industrial workers.
Yep.
That's it. That's the only thing, the school system. Yep. And you got to ask, if you disagree with that, then you got to ask yourself the question, why is it free?
Right.
Why is it free? Being provided for free, it benefits somebody, and who does it benefit? Well, it sure as hell isn't you. So yeah. we're conditioned at an institutional level to think that success is bad, to think that to aspire to be something bigger than the group collective is bad, to have more than other people is bad. Mm-hmm. And we're also conditioned to believe that it's a zero-sum game. It simply isn't. It simply isn't a zero-sum game. It's like we're taught to believe that if you have more, that means that I have less. Or in order for me to have more, you have to have less. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like the example I use of two tribes of Indians. One is a hunting tribe and one is a gatherer tribe. Or an agricultural tribe, and the agricultural tribe makes magnificent baskets that are watertight and can carry water. The hunting tribe makes arrows and spears and stuff like that, but they can't make baskets. So if these two come together and the hunting tribe says, you have no arrows and spears, but we have the best out there, and we will give you some of our spears and arrows for your baskets, you know, who's become more wealthy there? Have both sides gained in wealth? Mm-hmm. You know, this side now has baskets that they didn't have, and this side now has arrows and spears, which they need that they didn't have. Wealth has been created on both sides. It's not like there's a winner and a loser. So obviously if the hunting tribe had gone and stolen the baskets, there would be a winner and a loser. But at the end of the day, it's like, you know, Wallace Waddell says it in The Science of Getting Rich, every transaction you make has to give more in use value than you receive in money, in cash value. Mm-hmm. So, for example, I noticed you bought a copy of my book, which I appreciate. I mean, there's it was $5 or whatever, so there's more than $5 worth of use value. Mm-hmm. But there's less than $5 of materials gone into it. So I've gained because there was less than $5 in material, so I've made money, and you've gained because you've gained more than $5 of use value out of the book. It's an equitable exchange. Mm-hmm. You've gained wealth, and I've gained wealth in the transactions, whereas most people think, well, for me to gain, you have to lose. It's a zero-sum game. And if you're a decent human being and you go, well, I want to be fair, I want to be equal, then you're going to shy away from a zero-sum game, which means, you know, you're not going to have very much.
Right.
So the first thing is, like, accept that there's infinite abundance.
Right.
If abundance is infinite and you have an equal share in it, what's an equal portion of infinity?
Right. It's infinite.
Your share is unlimited.
Right. Yeah.
Just because this person over here has decided not to take their share doesn't mean that you should take less than yours. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. I love it. As a beautiful answer. And you started to tip into answering my second question. Maybe you already did, but I'll answer it. Is what would it look like in the world if we, Men in Black, right? We just kind of went in front of people and we flashed them, and they no longer have the limiting beliefs that were foisted upon them by school and society. And what if everybody tuned into this, all at the same time? What would that do to us?
Well, we'd move into an area of everybody is giving more than they take. I mean, I'll go to places where, it's a voluntary contribution, like church, for example. So you go to church, you don't have to pay to go to church, but it's like they put the offering basket around, right? So my philosophy on that is like, I'm always going to put in more than I took. So if I've got one seat out of 500, a building costs $500 for the morning, well, the seat was $1. They're going to give me a coffee at the end. That's $1. There's people getting paid for services. Maybe that's $1. So it's cost $3 for me to be there. So I'm going to donate $5. I'm going to give more than I'm going to give back more than I've taken. Mm-hmm. So I get massive benefit. And like any free event, not just church, any free event. Like I think, how much did it cost for me to be here? And I'm going to give in a donation more than it costs for me to be here.
Yeah.
So for me, if it costs $3 for me to be there and I give $4, that's almost there's no difference between $3 and $4 in my pocket, right? But if everybody did that, the abundance that would be created would be considerable. Most people, they go somewhere and they give less than they take.
Sure.
People that go to church, they go, "Oh, I'm not giving any money. This is a scam." It's like, well, whatever. It's like they give less than what they take from that place. Sure. So they go to a free event, a free concert, or free whatever. They give less than what they take. So if everybody just started giving a little bit more than what they take, what you would see would be a massive transformation in wealth, in mental health, in facilities. Everything would improve.
Sure.
But the problem is most people, they want to take more than what they've, they don't want to pay for what they've been given, basically.
Right. And that's because, right, and correct me if I'm wrong or if you have a different take on it, it's that's when they're entrenched in scarcity mindset, right? It's the belief that money isn't abundant. And so you got to take and you got to keep and you've got to store up. And you have to make sure that the exchange is always benefiting you in terms of, taking more than what you give, because that's exactly what you get taught, right?
And it's like, you're not going to live a very happy life if you have that mentality. If you constantly think people are trying to take from you,
right,
then you're simply not going to be very happy. And this is where you see people with millions of dollars they'll never be happy. They'll never be happy with that mentality. That's exactly right. And giving to charity, for example, I don't look at, my responsibility is the attitude that it's given with, not what happens with it on the other side. So a lot of people go, "Well, I'm not giving to charity because most of that's going to administration fees and this and that." It's like, well, that's got nothing to do with you. Mm-hmm. The giving is for your benefit, not for their benefit.
Right.
The giving is about, what is this doing to your heart? What is this doing to your mind? Mm-hmm. Is this making you more generous or more stingy? Because the world is going to be a better place with a more generous you in it. Mm-hmm. What happens to that money once it's given? It's no longer your, those people are going to be held accountable for that. Mm-hmm. If you just say, "Well, I'm not giving to whatever because those funds are abused." Well, you are going to be held accountable for your lack of giving, and they're not going to be held accountable for the corruption that didn't take place because you didn't give. Right. So I always look at, I ask myself the question, coming to work or whatever, what's going to make the best version of Cody show up at work? What's going to make the best version of Cody show up in this world? And I feel better when I give. So if I give and that makes the best version of Cody show up in the world, then I'm fulfilling my place in this world. And, that's, if I go, well, what makes the best version of Cody show up? It's giving to a charity, but then I don't do it because I'm skeptical. It's like, yeah, the worst version of Cody or a lesser version of Cody is going to show up. Now the world is not benefiting from what I was supposed to be here for.
Love it. Love it. Can I ask you a question about your kids?
You can.
Yeah. How many do you have and how old are they?
I've got three. I've got a 4-month-old, a 3-year-old, and one's getting ready to turn 5 in a few weeks.
Wow, you got your hands full.
It's the question. It's like, what makes the best version of Cody show up in the world? It's my children.
Yeah.
You know, you mentioned my kids. I smile, right? It's like, so that's the question you got to ask yourself, like, every day. What's going to make the best version of me show up? Because that's what the world needs.
Well, and they've also helped you 6 times your income too, right?
Look, I mean, the key to generating more income is to find a need bigger than yourself. So I'm on a push right now. So, you know, I'm getting up at 4 in the morning. Luckily, this is great for me because this is a podcast that's a good time for me. But most people don't accommodate me. They say you do it at 4 in the morning or you don't do it. And it's like, so I do it at 4 in the morning. Why? Because I was talking to my little boy the other day and he goes, Dad, can we get a house with a swimming pool and a slide in the swimming pool? That'd make me really happy, Dad. I said, yeah, we'll get that, EJ. He goes, do you promise, Dad? I said, yeah, I promise we'll get a house with a swimming pool and a slide. It's like, so now I've just made a $1 million commitment to my son. Sydney is the second most expensive real estate market in the world. You're not even going to get in. You're not going to get a condemned property for $1 million. Right. You know, a house with a pool is $1.5 million, $1.7 million, something like that. So I've just made $1 million plus promise to my child. And it's like, that's what drives me now. So when the alarm clock goes off at 3:30 and I don't want to get up, it's not me that's affected if I don't get up. Is it okay to have lied to my son? Mm-hmm. Or he loves his school. He goes to a private school. He loves his school. Am I going to pull him out of his school and take him from his friends because I couldn't be bothered to get up in the morning and do some income generating activity to pay his school fees? Be like, you know, hey, sorry, son. I know you love your school. I'm going to have to yank you out and start you all over again just because daddy couldn't be bothered to get out of bed.
Yeah.
It's having something bigger than yourself that you're doing it. Like just saying, I want to be rich. I want a Ferrari. I want a big, it doesn't work. It's like, you've got to have something bigger than yourself that means more than you.
Sure.
That there's no way out. There's no backing out. The bridge has been burnt.
Right. It's your legacy, right? That you're establishing, whether intentionally or, you know, by default.
Well, legacy is a beautiful word. So now, I mean, everything I do these days is legacy orientated. So I think, how does this apply to my legacy? So, you know, people, I mean, I get lots of opportunities. Like I've had a little bit of success over the last few years. So I'm very fortunate with that. And a lot of opportunities come my way and I look at the opportunity, which might present some short-term cash, but I ask myself the question, how does this impact my legacy or what kind of legacy does this leave? Mm-hmm. And if the answer, it doesn't leave a legacy or it doesn't impact it positively, then I just ditch it regardless of the financial gain. Because at the end of the day, you know, why are we here? What are we doing? You know, we've got to be working towards something bigger. We've got to be working towards something bigger than ourselves. And I've not gone back into depression since adopting that viewpoint.
I love it. Love it. Love it. So the question around your kids is, you know, as a father, how are you going about instilling this, you know, abundance philosophy and mindset into them? And one of them, you said a 3-year-old, is that the oldest one?
Yeah.
Yeah. So again, he or she is entering into one of the biggest windows of influence. There's 2 big windows of influence in a person's life. And the 3 to 5 year range is one of the first major windows.
Yes.
So how are you communicating to them? Like what are those lessons? What do those talks look like? Tell me, give me a glimpse into that.
Great, great question. So the first thing is I'm very careful with my language. I don't say we can't afford that, for example, because they're just going to model your behavior. True or false doesn't matter. It's like, you know, like how you see the world has really no bearing. The reality of the world has no bearing on how you see the world. It's all through your filter. So I don't want to give them the filter of you can't afford that because, or we can't afford that because that's giving them a filter that is not helpful, right? So it's like I want to make sure that I'm giving them paths to outcomes, right? So, for example, like if my son wants something, my oldest son, I'll make him work for it. There's very little given for free. Mm-hmm. So if he wants a new toy, then I will require a task for that. because I just don't want them going into the entitlement mentality to start with. It's like, charity is not acceptable. You know, charity is not acceptable for me or anybody else, really. Like, if you're in a disaster relief area, so biblically speaking, there are only two groups of people that are entitled to charity, and that's widows over the age of 55 and orphans. Mm-hmm. Those are the only two groups that are entitled to charity. That in that same section of the Bible, Paul then goes on to say, if you refuse to eat, refuse to feed them. Mm-hmm. Or if they refuse to work, refuse to feed them. Mm-hmm. So charity is only acceptable if you're an infant, and obviously you're orphaned, you have no choice. Or if you're a woman over the age of 55 and you've been widowed, you're in a situation where you possibly can't work. Charity is acceptable in those situations. Mm-hmm. You know, in the West, there's no reason for charity. Like, homelessness, we're going to get really controversial now. People are not going to like this, but it's like, you know, I live in the most expensive city in the world, and it's like, it only takes 20 hours a week at McDonald's to not be homeless. Mm. It doesn't take much to not be homeless in the most expensive city in the world. Yeah, you're not going to have a lot of luxury, but it's like, you're going to have a roof over your head from 20 hours a week at McDonald's. So bringing it back to my children, I want to teach them that if you want more, you have to do more.
Yeah.
If you want more, you have to do more. And if you don't have the cash to buy it, you can't afford it. Those are the two big lessons, right? Yeah, I wouldn't say you can't afford it, but it's like, you know, if you want something bigger than what you're able to achieve right now, then you're going to have to contribute more. You're going to have to make a bigger contribution. And again, that gets into, kind of jump into previous question, but money is created through contribution, right? Money is created through value. So the way you get money is to create more value. So when people say, I don't want more money, they're basically saying, I don't want to create more value. I don't want to make a bigger contribution. So the only way to actually make money long-term is to create value and to make contribution. Those are the two, those are the ways that you actually generate sustainable. I mean, you can be a drug dealer or whatever. People are going to say, well, what about that? It's like, yeah, but that's not sustainable, and it doesn't end well for those people.
Sure.
You know, long-term sustainable wealth is, the question that you've got to ask yourself is, how do I create more value? Mm-hmm. So if I were, you know, I'm on a drive right now. So I talk to my team and I don't say, how can we make more money? How can we make more money? My question to them is, you know, how do we create a better experience for our customers? Mm-hmm. How do we create more value into our products? Those are the questions that I'm asking them, because I want them to start thinking, okay, well, Cody wants a better experience for the customers. Mm-hmm. Cody wants more value built into the product. Well, guess what the byproduct of that is?
Right.
It's money.
Yeah.
You know, and at the end of the day, it's like, you know, what do I want to teach my boys? Well, it's, there are natural laws that govern everything, and you can't control the outcome. You can only control the situation. So for example, if you want to make ice, you don't have to, you have to understand the natural laws that where ice is created, which is a sub-zero environment and water. If you put water in a sub-zero environment, you don't have to get on your knees in front of your freezer and beg God, you know, please God, give me ice. But it's like, right. It will just happen. Right. So the same with money. It's like, you can't pursue money directly. The question is, what is the environment in which money shows up in? And that's value and contribution. Mm. So if you just pursue money directly, it's like, you know, it's like just sitting, getting on your knees and praying for ice. Well, you're probably not going to get it unless you live in Alaska and it's wintertime. But if you understand the actual environment, same with anything, you know, marriage, you know, I've got some friends that are having a rough time in their marriage. And it's like, well, how do you fix it? You ask, what is the environment in which a happy marriage shows up in? What's the environment? Mm-hmm. And then you just focus on creating that environment. That's it. You can't actually focus on the marriage itself. You can only focus on the environment. So, you know, I'm going a long way around to get to the answer here, but teaching them the environment that if you want to create an outcome, you have to understand the environment in which that outcome shows up. Mm-hmm. And if you create that environment, the outcome will show up automatically.
Right. And again, you're showcasing one, you know, another powerful principle, right? If you want better results, better outcomes, ask better questions, right?
Tony Robbins says that you want better results, ask better questions. Yeah, right. I mean, that if you take one thing away from this, that's it.
Right, absolutely.
Yeah.
Going to that relationship piece, right? I mean, it's easy to ask the question, why is this relationship crummy? And then your brain's going to give you a million reasons why the relationship is crummy, right?
Yeah, which doesn't help you at all.
Doesn't help you at all.
So look, a question that changed my life when I stopped asking the question, why me? And I started asking the question, why not me? Mm. Right. Why not me? Like, what, you know, what's special about me? Why do I not deserve this? You know, something bad would happen in my life. And I go, why me? Well, rains on the just and the unjust alike, right? Rain doesn't choose good people. It rains on everybody. Right. So the better question is, why not me? Mm-hmm. And again, it's like, you know, peel the onion, unpack it. Well, why not me? Do I feel like I'm special? Do I feel like I deserve better treatment than you, Dr. Nick? Do I feel like there's something about me? It's like, no, it's like once I start asking the question, why not me? That empowers me. Whereas if something happens and I go, why me? Woe is me. That just, you know, it puts me in a place where I think I have some entitlement to something better, which I don't. And I've put myself in a position where I have no control anymore. I'm just asking the question, why me? Whereas if I say, why not me? It's like, well, why don't I deserve this? Why do I not deserve? Why should I not have this, you know, piece of bad luck versus you, Dr. Nick? Like, what's the difference between us?
Right.
Get away from that entitlement. The whole world has been taken over by entitlement, and it's a cancer. It's a disease. It will destroy the West.
It's got a good head start right now, for sure, doesn't it? Yeah. So let's see if we can make this bridge happen here. So
let's do it.
And I want to bridge into your other book, The 90-Day Marketing Plan. And so talking about the phonies out there, right? Because I know that you've talked a lot about why would you listen to anybody who hasn't built anything from scratch and hasn't been up against, you know, all odds and came through and was successful, right? So there's a lot of that going on out there, right? So
correct.
Not talking about that, but talking about, you know, the folks that offer how to market. I actually am working with a coach around marketing myself, right?
Yep.
What's your angle on that? What's going to, and I bought your book and I actually bought an upsell on it too. So I'm excited for those things to chew through.
Thank you.
But what's going to be kind of your angle on a 90-day marketing plan that what's your differentiator, I guess, is what I'm asking.
Okay. So really, like, simplicity. So content does not equal value. So in the marketplace, a lot of people mistakenly believe when they're creating a course or creating a book that the more money you charge, the more content you have to create, which actually that's the complete opposite is true. That, you know, the value is in brevity. If I can give you on one page everything you need to solve all of the problems in your business, that's immensely more valuable than if I give you a two-year coaching engagement, right? So everything that I do is designed to be brief. It's brevity. If it doesn't make you money, if it doesn't get you closer to where you want to be, I've left it out. And that's kind of a theme that I've always gone with. When I was, you know, when I started investing in training and stuff like that, it's like there was just a lot of waffle. You know, I'd jump on a training call, which I paid a bunch of money to be on, and it was, you know, 2 hours of waffle for 2 minutes of gold. And I'm like, well, look, you know, to be honest, I would rather have just had that 2 minutes and then had the rest of the time.
So, right, to execute on it, right?
But people feel like they have to give the 2 hours of content to create the perception of value. So I kind of stripped that away, and it's like, well, what is essential? What is essential for your success? And if it's not essential, get rid of it. So we talked about it just briefly earlier on, was income generating activities. So one of the things that I talk about in the book is what really changed my business as well, going from $9,000 to $180,000 in a year, was every task of every day, I asked myself the question, is this income generating activity? And if the answer was no, then I'd stop it and I'd find income generating activity. So if you're spending 6 hours, 7 hours, 8 hours a day on income generating or potentially income generating activity, there's only one possible outcome if you do that over an extended period. Sure. Because as business owners, there's a lot of tasks we can do within the day that makes us feel good, like makes us feel like we're doing something, but actually we're not. We're just wasting time and it's not producing revenue. It's not producing income. So everything in the book is income generating activity. There's nothing in there that isn't income generating.
And proven through either your work or the work that you've done with other people, right?
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And look, there's two questions that you need to ask yourself. Like, if you want to, like, let's just say you and I were having a conversation right now and you're thinking about working with me. So there's two questions that you need to ask yourself is, has Cody been where I am and is he where I want to be? Mm-hmm. Those are the two questions. Mm-hmm. So if I've been where you are and I am where you want to be, then there's a probability, there's a reasonable probability that I have the map to get there. Mm-hmm. So people ask those questions and they just look at the outcome that's being promised. Donald Trump can say, I'm going to teach you how to build a $1 billion real estate empire. It's like, well, okay, that's great. I wouldn't mind a $1 billion real estate empire, but has he ever been where I am? Mm-hmm. And the answer is no, he didn't. He started with a multi-million, you know, father, developer. Mm-hmm. His starting point was vastly different to mine. So even though he's got may or may not have good information, he was never where I am. So he's not a valid coach. Mm-hmm. The question is the person you're talking to where you are, or have they been where you are, and are they where you want to be? So that, sure. Those are the two things that I look for when I'm looking at, you know, looking at a coach or buying a course or a product or something like that.
Right. That's powerful. And that's, you talked about that in another show, and that's how you look for a mentor as well.
Yeah. And the other question is like, you know, can they help you? Will they help you? So I've hired mentors that can help me, but they haven't. Like, I might just want your money. Like, I might be very well positioned to help you, but I don't want to. Mm-hmm. I don't care if you get the result. I just want your money and not get a chargeback or refund. That's all I care about. Like, or, you know, so you've got to ask the question, not only can this person help me, will this person help me? Are they willing to help me? Because a lot of people, they've been where they are, where you want to be. They've been where you are, but they have the love of money. They have the love of money. They don't care about you or your journey or getting you
right
to where you want to be. So I've had several mentors that, you know, answer the question affirmatively, can you help me? But then fail miserably in the question, will you help me once I engage you? So you've got to ask that as well. So you need to do some research into the person that you're thinking about working mm-hmm. with and determine, is this person actually willing to help me as well? Do they have the willingness to do it, or are they just mm-hmm. going to take my money? And mm-hmm. that's that, end of.
Yeah. So income generating activity, like what are you seeing like right now, you know, in the people that you're working with or potential clients, you know, what are they spending their wheels on? What are they wasting their time with? That's like kind of automatically stop doing these things. Like, what are you seeing right now?
Yeah. So the main thing that you need to do is start making offers. You're not making money if you're not making offers. So that's what you've got to really, really focus on. So like, is this income generating activity? It is, because you very graciously said before that we started the call that you're happy for me to make an offer at the end, and then that people will see it. So this qualifies as income generating activity,
right?
So this is income generating activity. It's like, and this is part of my day. I did another interview earlier on, you know, I've got some more stuff later on. So it's like, you know, is this, how do I make more offers? How do I get in front of more people? How do I communicate to more people? So it might be something as simple as like, you just make a post on your Facebook page. It says, hey, you might not know this, but I work with X and I help them solve this problem. If anybody's interested, just send me a message. Well, that's an offer. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The real question, and this will tell you the health of your business instantaneously. It'll also give you a map to solve the problem, is how many people know about you, Dr. Nick, that want, need, and can pay for your services that didn't know about you yesterday?
Right. I love that one. Yeah.
How many people know about you this week that didn't know about you last week? How many people know about you this month that didn't know about you last month? And most business owners, if they're being very honest, like, the answer to that number is very, very low. So if at the end of this week, 5 people know about you that didn't know about you last week, that's vastly different to 50 people or 100 people. So mm-hmm. whatever gets measured improves, right? That's just a basic law of business. Mm-hmm. Whatever gets measured gets improved. So we want to start measuring stuff that's going to move the needle. And that is something that's going to move the needle. How many people know about you today that didn't know about you yesterday?
Right.
If yeah, we can
go ahead.
Go on, sir.
No, I was going to, well, you know, some of my success in coaching is helping, I've helped clinicians build private practice with cash paying clients. And the initial strategy, I'm on Facebook groups too with counselors and therapists, and I'll say this thing because it's absolute truth, but few people want to hear it, and even less execute on it. But if you were to call, text, or email 2 people a day for the next 90 days and say, hey, I'm a therapist and I work with these type of people for these kinds of outcomes. If you just did that, contacted two people a day, either face-to-face, call, or text, or an email, by the end of that 90 days, you would have more business than what you can do, what you would know what to do with. But people just don't believe it, and they don't do it.
Well, their paradigm's going to kick in, their filter's going to kick in, and they go, oh, that's going to upset people, or that's going to irritate people, or that's not going to work. It's like, really? Have you tried it? You know, the number of people where I give, like, you know, tested, proven formula, it's like, this is all you need to do is copy and paste this and send this out. That's it. It will make you money, I promise. And then they come back and go, oh, you know, this didn't work. I'm like, did you send it out? And they're like, no, I didn't, because I just knew it wouldn't work. It's like, you know, some people, you can give them $100 bill and they'll sell it for 50.
Right. Yeah.
But it's like you say, you know, if you're looking to generate clients, you know, clinical clients, stuff like that, if you reach out to two people a day, after 90 days, that's 180 people. That's 180 offers. You know, at a 1% conversion rate, you've got two clients. It's like, versus, you know, yeah, most people, like, that's what I say, that number will tell you everything. How many people know about you over an extended period of time? Mm-hmm. And then set a plan. So I'm a big fan of LinkedIn. So, or, you know, Facebook will be the same. So I'm like, if you reach out to 30 people a day, can you connect with 30 people a day on LinkedIn? Can you connect with 30 people a day on Facebook? Yes, you can. That's 1,000 people a month. You know, 30 some days in the month. I mean, you're right at 1,000, just under 1,000 people in 1,000 people a month. Over a 12-month period, that's over 10,000 people that know about you at the end of the year that didn't know about you at the beginning of the year. Right. Now, are they all going to be interested? No. Are they all going to buy? No. Are most of them going to buy? No. But out of 10,000 people, have you doubled or tripled your business? And it's just those little things. And, you know, at the end of the day, it's a Jim Rohn phrase. He says that the ground responds to seed, not need. Hmm. And a lot of people, when I start working with them, they go, I need clients today. I need this. And I'm like, well, if you didn't plant a crop in the spring, you're not getting a harvest this fall. The ground does not care what you need.
Right.
It doesn't care. You can sit here and say, well, I need. Your need is not recognized by nature. If you didn't put seeds in the ground, you're not getting a harvest. So how many seeds are you putting in the ground every day? So if you start putting 30 seeds in the ground every day, come fall, when it's time to harvest, you're going to have a crop.
Right. But if you didn't, no farmer plants a seed day one and then day two expects to harvest, right?
No, which is what business owners do.
Right.
You know, that's what I say. I say, well, look, you need a crop now. Well, I'm like, here's what you need to do now. You need to figure out a way to find resources to get through the winter and then make damn sure you don't miss the planting season in the spring.
Right.
Because, you know, nature will not be cheated. You can't not plant a crop and get a harvest. Nature doesn't work like that. It just doesn't.
Love it. Cody, one of the things, and we've already talked about it, but I want to kind of make it more succinct here. But yeah. One of the things I ask everybody that comes on my show is to give their definition, their take on the concept of mindset. How would you describe it? How do you define it?
So it's it's the lens with which you see the world.
Mm-hmm.
It's the lens with which you see the world. So it's like the old, Nightingale story where he talks about, there was a guy, going to another town, and he sat at the bus stop in the middle, and somebody comes by, and he says, I'm going to this town. What are the people like in the next town? And the guy goes, well, what were the people like in the last town you were at? And the guy goes, they were lovely people. And he goes, well, I think you'll like the people in this next town. And then there's another guy sat there, and the same thing happens. And he goes, someone comes along and goes, I'm heading to this next town. What are the people like? And he goes, well, what were the people like in the last town? He goes, they were nasty and vicious and vindictive, and all they wanted to do was scam you and rip you off. And he goes, well, you'll probably find the same in the next town then. How you see the world is not a reflection of the world. How you see the world is a reflection of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
The mirror never lies. What you're seeing is just simply a reflection of yourself. So if there's something in the world that's not right, it's just an indication that there's something inside of yourself that's not right. Now, the mistake that most people make is they go to work on the world.
Mm-hmm.
When there's nothing wrong with the world. If you're seeing something wrong with the world, then you have to have the wisdom to understand that this is the world telling you that there's a problem with inside of you, mm-hmm. and go to work inside of yourself. So
yeah.
Mindset is the paradigm with which you see the world.
Yeah. So that work on yourself, what's one thing that you could offer me and my audience for, what's one thing that they can do to start doing that work on themselves?
Well, you've got to wake up. You've got to become self-aware. you've got to become aware of your thoughts. So most of our thoughts are habitual. We don't even know. We're so used to habitually thinking, we don't even know. We don't even know the thoughts that we're thinking. So step number one is you've got to become aware that you're having these thoughts, and at this point, you're not in control of them.
Right. Take every thought captive.
Take every thought captive. You've got to, you know, it's like, this is so critical. It's like, well, again, it's like the Bible says, be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Mm-hmm. Transformation does not come anywhere other than the renewing of your mind. The promises of the Bible are contained in the renewal of the mind.
Right.
And you know, it clearly says, take every thought captive,
mm-hmm.
guard the entry to your mind. And yeah, the renewing comes, the transformation comes within the renewing of your mind. You'll be shocked how radically your life can change.
Mm-hmm.
Shocked. It's like I said at the beginning of the call, Dr. Nick, like people came to me after 6 months and said, I don't even know you.
Mm-hmm.
I went from being unable to get out of bed, literally unable to get, I mean, I just could not physically get myself out of the bed, to 6 months later being, you know, people are going, what's your secret? What have you been eating? What drugs are you taking? It's like, this is a different person. It's like, I wasn't moderately improved. I was literally transformed. And what happened in that 6 month period was I literally replaced my old mindset with a radically new one.
Yeah.
Love so it. Yeah, become aware that you're having these thoughts, and it's like, ask yourself, did I choose that thought or did it just show up?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I go like, you know, my little thing that I'm working on right now is I'm very picky about coffee at coffee shops. They'll give me a coffee, and if it's not exactly right, then my mind just goes off. And when that happens, I just have to ask myself, did I choose that thought that just come to my mind, or is that a thought that I had that's been put into my mind by something or something else, mm-hmm. or has shown up? So, yeah, become aware of the thoughts that you're having, and you have the power to reject them. You have the power to change them.
Perfect. Yeah, that's very valuable. Thank you for sharing that with me and in my audience. It's been a great conversation. We're at the point to where we're going to, you know, wind it down. You have definitely provided value, and in my exchange is, give us your offer. Like, what is it that you do, and how can people work with you, and yeah, let us have it. What are you doing for folks?
Yeah, so I've got my two books, Got Attitude, which, like, if you're just starting out in business, that's kind of the place to start, because it's going to get your mind right. If your mind is right, you're not going to go wrong. If your mind is wrong, you're never going to go right. So the two books are kind of like the foundational mindset required, and then the 90-day marketing plan is much more the technique. So both of those are available on Amazon. You can go to the 90daymarketingplan.biz if you'd like a copy of that. And if you want to work with me, then I'm easy to find. You can find me on Facebook. I'd recommend starting with one of those books, have a read through, see if it resonates with you. If it resonates with you, you don't have to worry about finding me. I'm going to find you. I'm pretty good at marketing.
Yeah, love it.
You'll be given plenty of opportunities to work with me.
Excellent. Well, again, thank you so much for making time for me.
Thank you.
I really enjoyed the conversation. I hope we have more conversations in the future.
And absolutely.
I think there's a lot of overlap between, you know, what you're doing and what I'm doing. And you know, also tell people you have a podcast too, right?
Yeah. Small Business Marketing Made Easy.
Yep. And
yep,
you just
Small
just
Business
launched
Marketing
that
Made Easy
a month ago, right? You're pretty fresh in.
Yeah. Yeah, very, very, very recent thing. So I enjoy podcasts. Like, podcasts are very valuable. You know, it's like, if I'm in my car, I would rather be listening to a podcast mm-hmm. than anything else, because generally speaking, like, podcasts deliver value. So as I said earlier on, if you want to make more money, then the question is, how do I deliver more value? And I think the podcast is the vehicle to deliver more value to the marketplace. So that's why I've got into podcasting, is it's a vehicle to give more value.
Absolutely. And for the most part, people that are tuned in the podcast do so because they like it. They like the format. So go over to Cody Butler's podcast and show them some love over there. Subscribe
do.
And all that. Leave 5-star reviews.
Excellent.
All right, my friend.
Thank
Cody,
you, Dr. Nick.
So
I appreciate it.
We'll talk to you later. That was Cody Butler. And I got to be honest, I really don't care what you think. Well, I do. You're my audience. But that conversation, that interaction that I had with Cody Butler was so impactful for me personally that I'm just glad I did it. And I can't wait to have him on the show again so that he can even dive deeper into
what it is that he does and how he helps people. I know there's people in this audience that heard Cody and want to connect with him. All those links, as always, are in my show notes, and I really encourage you to do that. If you have a small business, if you have something that you're trying to launch and get up and off the ground, I know Cody can help you. If that's the case, go check him out on social media. Go check him out on his website. He has a YouTube channel. He's got a podcast. He has all those things, and you'll find all the links, as always, in my show notes. Head over to my website for those links. Hey, as always, to get the details on this show and to find out more about this guest, head over to my website. My website is www.nicksotelo.com/TUL podcast, the Upgraded Life Podcast. While you're over at my website, don't forget to check out the three opportunity buttons at the very top. They are scheduling a time with me. I'll give you a free 30-minute strategy session. Checking out CBD products from Nature's Ultra. And then also, if you're looking to create an additional stream of income, I can help you out with that too. This takes 20 minutes of your time. Click on the button that says Income Boost. Give me your name and email, and I'll send you a presentation. Thank you again so much for listening to my show, the Upgraded Life Podcast. I'm dedicated to this show because I've seen too many people live a life that just really wasn't about realizing and reaching their potential. So if you listen to this show and you were somehow, some way inspired to take action, let me know by going over to Apple Podcasts, leave me a 5-star review, and that will tell me that you enjoyed the show. This is Dr. Nick Sotelo, and I'm urging you to do something today to realize and reach your potential, and I'll catch you on the next show.